and the High Country Radio Program. For WHUS Stores in Connecticut, I'm Dory Smith.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathurst Spears Broadsides for February 3rd, 2005, with hopefully special guests Ralph Myberg and, who knows, perhaps a guest host Scott Graham. We're hoping he's going to come into the studio, and some other folks too. So stay with us.
What does it mean to have and companies do anything they like using scabs. Scabs. The lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brain, they got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. Now, before we had our union, let me tell you, conditions were bad. Understaffed, overworked, underpaid, till we finally got mad. But then when we walked out to protect our rights, they just gave away our jobs to those parasites, to those scabs. Scabs. The lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brain, they got no heart. They're tearing our communities apart. I could puke watching co-workers turned into weasels and traitors. They must be pod people hatched by those corporate raiders and insider traders. You know our labor laws are crazy. They're so damn two-faced. They say I haven't been fired, just permanently replaced by scabs. The lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brain, they got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. Oh, listen to your mama, this isn't idle gab. You're pretty damn low on the food chain when you think you gotta grab your striking neighbor's job. I guess you gotta be a scab.
And that is Scabs by Ann Feeney from her album Look to the Left. Previous song, also on Look to the Left, was We Just Come to Work Here. We Don't Come to Die. And I guess I come to talk here, and hopefully you do too if you're listening in on www.freakradio.org. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Some are broadcasting, as we understand, at 101.1 FM, which I think is a good thing, but it ain't happening from here, I can tell you that, and I don't know who's doing it or where or what and anything else, man, so heck, stay away from me. That's an unpaid political announcement for the FCC. You can call in and talk on this show if you'd like. The show is concerned with issues of civil rights in Santa Cruz, contemporary political issues, particularly around folks out of doors. And got a lot of interviews coming up this evening on that subject, plus continuing debate and discussion on the City Council's rush job. It's faster fuel than that, but fast locomotive around the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel project, which is coming up for a final vote at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting next Tuesday. That's just 5 days away. You wouldn't know it from reading the Sentinel. You wouldn't know it from reading the Good Times. You wouldn't even know it from reading the Metro, which had sympathetic discussions on the subject by Sarah Phelan in her news column. But, in fact, there is a second vote coming up. The last vote was 4-3 to push this multi-million dollar development, this indebtedness that will tie down the city for decades to come on behalf of a private corporation and a very small return, high risk, huge amount of traffic, destruction of Clearview Court, I should say the further destruction of Clearview Court. And you can hear my position on this. Obviously, I've kind of made up my mind, but the main focus that I've been concerned about, and I actually filed 3 Brown Act complaints about to the City Council, that's a complaint that the Public Meetings Act isn't being followed, is the process that they're using under Speedy Gonzalez, Mike Rotkin, Speedy Rotkin, who is pressing this thing fast and furious, even though if you talk to fiscal conservatives, environmentalists, just about anybody who isn't tied to the project by either the union jobs or kind of a tight-knit business community mentality here, you'll find that the process being used is a super fast process. It is being passed at off-week sessions. Normally, City Council is every second and fourth Tuesday. It was passed last month. The public hearings were put through very quickly in two special sessions in the middle of the week, Tuesday and Wednesday. And then it was quickly passed with no further extension of public discussion a week ago Tuesday, and comes up for a final vote this Tuesday. A faster process. And then at least three people on the city council want. And these I haven't got much to say usually that's very positive about the city council, but I agree with them in this instance, Riley, Porter, and Fitzmaurice, that the community is not having its say on this issue, particularly when there's such, at least it's claimed, and I tend to believe it, that there are such basic changes in the Beach South Laurel plan that was sort of set down for long-range planning in the city and that is being changed in order to facilitate a particular hotel project, which activist Ralph Myberg suggests is being pushed by former council member, former mayor Scott Kennedy, and was sort of arranged by him and is now being carried out by his faithful successor, Mike Rodkin. So the number to call the city council offices if you want to see some postponing of this project is 420-5020. We may have Ralph Myberg calling in on the show later tonight. He's running from one meeting to another. He spoke at the end of the last show on Sunday when I was on, and he'll be calling back, I'm hoping, today, and if not, then on Sunday. And apparently, it's a very crowded city council agenda next Tuesday, and it's going to have all kinds of stuff on the evening, which no doubt will provide a pretext for cutting back discussion that I'd be surprised if Mayor Mike Rodkin doesn't use it on other public hearings involving things like cell towers and raising the water rates and things of that sort. I don't have a copy of the agenda. It just came out this evening, but I will hopefully have it in hand on Sunday, and it should be posted on the Internet pretty soon for those of you who delight in city council stuff. How are we doing here? Well, let's turn now to a breather. Some people may be wondering, why am I talking about this Coast Hotel project, which impacts, you know, some people on the west side, environmentalists, and does, in fact, put the city economy in hock, but doesn't actually have particular reference to civil rights in terms of poor people or social services, though I guess there's some who would claim that if you put up a big hotel project and it starts returning money to the general fund, that's more money for social services. That's been the litany of Rodkin, Kennedy, Matthews for some years, and theoretically true, of course, but of course the side effects of bringing in huge businesses into the area can have some pretty negative impacts, as well as, of course, the gentrification factor, which actually is on both sides of the political fence. The same people who are pushing for this against this project, who I am essentially sympathetic to in terms of their arguments, are also often the same people who are not particularly friendly to restoring or even maintaining the rights of people who live in their vehicles, poor people, homeless people. And that's a concern of mine. So while I'm trying to work out these contradictory notions, why not hear a little bit of a few interviews I made in the last couple weeks? That'll give me time to catch my breath, and who knows, maybe you'll give you some thoughts and some basis for calling in and talking about it if you'd like. Phone number here is 427-3772 if you want to be a part of that discussion. The website to go to if you want to jump in the chat room is pagesincolor.com.
It's about 1:30 on Tuesday, January 18, 2005. I'm on the second floor of Pacific Avenue in the new Attic Tea Shop, having a cup of tea with Valerie Christie, who's a street performer and a Huff member. Hey, Valerie.
Hello.
And Valerie, I was talking to you about upcoming issues tonight as the sellout of the, I call it the sellout of the Clearview Court people. That happened some time ago, but it's the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, coming down the pike. And you're a woman who plays on the streets, You've also noticed a phenomena, you say, about how people notice or don't notice you even before you play, even as you walk down the street. So this is a personal experience you've had. What is that experience?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like people don't notice me because I'm a woman.
Because you're a woman?
Yeah, I think so.
And you think that, have you noticed this happening to other women too? Have you had other women comment to you about this?
No.
But yet you feel it's because you're a woman, though, not because you're you specifically.
I feel like people, it's not so much they don't notice me, it's that they ignore me. You know, they feel like they have to just pass me by and not say hello. Because if they did, they were coming on to me.
And you also mentioned that there's a practice of people shaking hands with men and not with women that you've noticed perhaps more in the past, but still in the present?
Well, it's just that's what men do. They shake hands. For a woman and a man to shake hands is kind of unusual. It's becoming more common now as people try to break down barriers, but usually it's the woman who's trying to break the barrier down. Once in a while you see a man who will shake a hand of a woman, but that's unusual. It's not like a common thing to shake hand of a woman. It's two men shaking hands. That's the thing.
So in the last year or so, do you have any specific memories of men you've met who didn't shake your hand?
Well, it's not that they didn't, like they avoided it. It's not that. It's just that it's not common. It's just, you know, they'll just nod at you or something, and they'll shake the hand of the guy you're hanging out with, you know, but you're pretty much like the sideline, you know, and it's just the way it is with women, it's just, you know.
And you were thinking of possibly playing tonight, Tuesday night, at the, I guess, City Council, maybe tomorrow, Wednesday night, I guess it's the SAFE event, SAFE 51, 51 weeks of SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, street performers in front of New Leaf Market. But you said that you're a little bit concerned that people wouldn't notice you if you were playing, less so than if a male musician were playing.
Well, it's actually an experience I've had where there was a big celebration of the new city council, people coming in, and I sang outside, and pretty much people just passed me by, like, and, you know, maybe they wouldn't have, but it sometimes feels as though, you know, like if there was some colorful-looking male type hanging there, people would maybe pay more attention than they would with just a woman standing there playing the guitar. It's like, I don't know, it feels as that way. And I may be wrong because just get a feeling I get, and it's probably a negative way of thinking about things, but sometimes I get that feeling and I feel like I need support. I can't do it by myself.
Interestingly enough, I got a secondhand report about a book called Blink, which talked about how women as musicians were severely underrepresented in orchestras until they started doing blind auditions, where they put a screen between the auditioners and the person auditioning. And then suddenly women shot up and actually started getting making a majority of the orchestra, because the people who were making the choices, of course, were either men or presumably women influenced by sexist ideas. Apparently, you know, it's some notion of how a trombone player should look and how a, you know, tuba player should look. I don't know. I mean, now again, I don't know about the actual stats. This is a secondhand story, but this is the kind of about that struck me as interesting. What about on the streets as a SAFE performer? Do you notice much discrimination between men and women there? Do you think women have more men than women tried to join the group? Is there any difference?
No. Not really. I have noticed, like, drum circles, the men will take over the scene and look at the woman as though she doesn't know what in the heck she's doing, even if she may know what she's doing. I know that there was a group of famous rock and roll people who got together and created a female concert because they felt that they were not really paid attention to. And there was more attention on the male groups and the male single singers than the women, and even though they go, well, there's a female group, they were always less attention, less popularity, and, you know, fame, trying to get them noticed is put into them. So I guess I'm not the only one thinking it in that way, because I did hear them complain about that.
How about in Santa Cruz? Do you have any specific feeling about here? Has that changed at all in the last couple of decades, pretty much the same?
I don't know. I haven't been out enough to really experience that. So there's more people, musicians who play more often. They may know more about that than me.
Thank you, Valerie. Okay, it's about 2:05 in front of Union Grove Music parking area. Not on the planter, because that would be illegal, but right next to the planter is
Alex
with a sign that says homeless, spare change for motel room. What's going on here? Aren't the streets good enough for you? What about the bushes? What's going on?
The bushes suck.
And you've been out in the bushes a lot?
Yeah, when I don't stay in motel rooms or houses.
Now, you say your boyfriend has been nabbed by the polizia?
Yeah, he got arrested yesterday for a camping ticket, and he's still in jail.
And what was the nature of the arrest? Tell me how it happened.
They rolled up on us when we were walking to our room.
And how many police, and what did they say?
Officer Hoppy and some chick cop came up and said that he had a ticket, or had a warrant for his arrest for camping.
And how many times was the illegal camping ticket for?
Wait, what was the question?
And the question was how many times. This was a warrant for one camping bus,
yeah,
or a number?
I got arrested for a camping ticket, and I was in there for 2 hours, and he's still in jail. He's bailed like $400.
Did you have to bail yourself out, or did you get a warrant?
I got a warrant. But they said when he got arrested that it was no warrantable.
And how long ago were you jailed for camping?
On Halloween.
And how many camping tickets were involved in your jailing?
Just that one, but I've gotten plenty others.
And what was the ultimate disposition after that jailing?
Huh?
What happened to that ticket?
I owe $135.
Did you pay it?
No.
So there probably is another ticket out there for failure to pay waiting for you?
Probably.
And when they came up upon you, only he was arrested, you weren't?
Yeah, I got a ticket.
You got a ticket, but he was the one taken to jail?
Yep.
So did
that was his first time being arrested for a camping ticket.
So was this? Did it look like, did they have a warrant, or did they have a warrant for you too, but they weren't serving it? What was the deal?
I don't know. Mine was a warrant that they could write a ticket for, they said.
Because it looks like, were you both getting pretty much the same kinds of camping tickets? Have you been together since
yeah.
that time?
Yeah.
And when you got ticketed, were you both ticketed together?
Yeah.
And how many tickets did you say you both have gotten?
Like 10.
About 10?
Yeah.
Now, if that's the case, why would they arrest him and not you?
No idea.
So it sounds like it's a matter of police discretion here.
I have no idea.
So you're a diminutive woman. How tall are you?
5'4".
And how old are you?
18.
And have you, how long have you been in town now?
Almost a year.
Are the police treating you markedly differently than they were a year ago? Are they more impatient with you, less impatient?
Before I came to Santa Cruz, like, I didn't have to deal with that very many cops.
Say that again?
Before I came to Santa Cruz, I didn't deal with that many cops.
But let's say, compare with 9 months ago. Compare with when you first got to Santa Cruz, are things any different from when they were?
Not really.
And is your case, you think, kind of unusual, or have you heard it happening to other people?
It happens to other people.
Now, City Council Member Vice Mayor Cynthia Matthews might say to you, well, why don't you go use the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program?
I don't have an ID.
And they won't allow you in if you don't have an ID?
Yeah.
And, you know, that could be a defense in court. If you don't have an ID, you can't get into the ISSP program.
I guess.
So if anybody else out there wants to appeal, challenge one of their tickets, what you should do is first disqualify referee Baskin as you go down to the basement in the county building. And you go up to the window and you sign a piece of paper that says, I swear under penalty of perjury, I think that this referee sucks and I don't want him to be my referee. You don't have to give a reason. You just have to believe he's prejudiced.
Uh-huh.
And you have to cite 170.6 CCP as the code section. I could write it down for you if you want. I'm saying it on the air so people can hear it. And then you go in, you plead not guilty in the court, they give you a court date, and then you call HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or you come to a Wednesday meeting, and we'll try and help you out a bit. Again, it's a pain in the ass going through the courts, but it's something, if you want to fight the sleeping ban, you can do.
Right on.
Cool. Anything else from the streets, Alex, you want to tell us? It's Alex, right?
Yeah. No, that's about it.
Thanks for taking up a few moments for us.
Welcome.
Hail sings.
You can be a Christian, a yogi or Jew. You can do your karate or your kung fu. Can't practice your lies and live the truth. And I hope you are ready when it comes for you. You can swim on the ocean or lie on the shore.
My hands are too numb.
His hands are too numb, folks. But you get the idea.
And that was from a SAFE event. SAFE actually had its 53rd week. That's SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. Street performers who plunk and sing and strum and stir soup. And some of us also give out literature and soapbox, actually. For the last couple of weeks, we've actually had a real honest-to-God milk crate that we have a soapbox sign on, not being able to find a genuine historic soapbox, but soapboxing, of course, is standing up and speaking out on street corners and public places about issues of contemporary concern, and that's what some of us were doing last night, and we'll be doing next week again. And in fact, even as I speak, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group that works with SAFE, concerned with civil rights for poor folks, is very close to New Leaf Market, right in front of Borders there on Pacific Avenue, and perhaps playing this very show out of a tiny, tinny radio on the table, as well as giving out seditious literature and no doubt fielding disruptive interjections from CSO Pam Bechtel, the local police gendarme, who delights in giving out tickets and exercising control and oversight of Pacific Avenue, using petty laws to harass the poor, which is, of course, a power given by the city council to the police department. I suppose the directive given by a combination of groups, city council, downtown business association, police department hierarchy, and so forth. And, of course, one of my concerns over the years has been to stop that kind of harassment and to give people a chance to use the public spaces freely and equally. Looks like a call here. Let's see who is calling in. Hi, you're on free radio. Whoops. Oh, you were on free radio. I'm getting some calls from the phone company on this phone, strangely enough, but that's not for broadcast. Anyway, you can be broadcast, or I should say you can swim and surf and come out on the Internet with us here at freakradio.org if you want to give a call in, 427-3772. And I know that right before I came to the studio, a young man came up to me and said he really wanted to give a report on the air, and he was bound for jail tomorrow morning, and he couldn't talk to me on the mall because he was banned from coming to the mall. So if anybody has seen this person and knows who he is and wants to get him on the phone, I will personally kick down 50 cents so he can call in if anybody wants to lend him the money listening to this broadcast at the table downtown on Pacific Avenue. I'd like to know what's going down there. Let's hear a little more professional music. We got professional music. We got amateur music. We got music of different kinds. Let's hear a little more from Ann Feeney, and then I will be back.
Baby in the ICU. Could have saved a dollar if he spent a dime.
And that was Ann Feeney, National Healthcare Now. Again, from Look to the Left. Look to the left, look to the right. Call in, 427-3772. Here's an interview a week or two ago with a woman who was looking at my car, which is covered with bumper stickers and was parked near the Dakota. And she reminded me that she'd known me back in 1999 when we, some of us in Huff, had been trying to focus attention on misguided police orders that essentially discourage people from calling in medical emergencies if they were heroin users, because they would be likely arrested or harassed for their use of heroin. And so, for example, they're deterred from assisting people in medical crisis. And one of her close friends apparently died as a consequence of a 911 failure there. And that became the subject of some debate and discussion in the Homeless Issues Task Force, which actually was happening at that time. So let's hear a little bit of that. And who knows? Maybe you'll find something interesting here.
It's about 20 to 11 here in front of the Dakota, and we're talking with
Jennifer. My name's Jennifer. Jennifer Olson.
And Jennifer, you were... You lost a friend in 99 to heroin, right?
Yeah.
Had some really serious concerns at that time.
Well, yeah, my biggest concern was why it took so long for why nobody called 911. And it was over, it was 5 o'clock in the evening. And I got back about 9 in the evening. And then that's when 911 was called. I called myself. And then my other concern was the guy had been drinking all day long, and other people alike that were addicts. I'm actually an addict myself now in recovery, but at the time I was an alcoholic and I never had done any heroin, and I had no idea that if you drink alcohol and then do heroin, it'll kill you.
So this, the name of the person who died was
Anthony Rouse.
Begins to come back to me, and at that time there were a number of people, I know homeless people were being subject to a lot of violent attacks, more so than still is the case, but they actually documented that for the first year, that if you were homeless you were 3 times as likely to be attacked physically than if you were
that
not.
That was the question that what the sergeant had, is if there was any foul play, and that's been a fear of mine, being in relationships with certain people, like especially a spouse that batters or whatnot. I called my family a few years back and told them that I was a working girl on the streets. I was now a heroin addict, and I was telling them this not to hurt them or to cause them grief, but because I was scared that easily someone could come up and shoot dope with me and then stick a needle right by me, and who would know the difference? You know what I mean? Who would know the difference that it wasn't purposely, somebody purposely tried to OD me with, and at the time I was dating a gentleman that was threatening me and telling me these things, and the only thing I could do about that would be to get back as an acceptable part of my community and to become the human being again that I wasn't being. My life was unmanageable, I was out of control. People from the outside looking in easily could have said, oh yeah, that would be Jennifer, poor thing, you know, and easily accept the fact that yeah, she killed herself because it's foul play. And how would they know the difference? Is there a thing they can do to find out? You know, I mean.
Well, is there a thing they'd bother to do? I mean, you might be dismissed as being debris or just another homeless person.
Yeah,
or
statistics.
You know, there's that attitude that tends to maintain itself.
He was buried at sea, and that's the thing I would like to express. Like, it just in recovery is. We tend to get taught in recovery, the 12-step programs, that it's a progressive disease and that we will again pick up right where we left off within a reasonable amount of time, a short period of time. Like, it's per se, okay, there's a couple things here. If you drink a 12-pack a day, when I first started to drink, one beer got me intoxicated. Over the years, I developed a tolerance to where 12 beers, I was intoxicated after one, but I could handle 12. then as time goes on, your liver, your body, your equilibrium, your I can't think of the name of it, but you're back to where you started, where one beer will get you intoxicated. But what I'm saying is a lot of people will go for a dry out into jail or institutions, and they will believe that that they can come out and do as much as they were doing the day they went in. And they got to keep in mind that you never know, especially with hard drugs, what kind, how potent it is or isn't, and that's why they say to test your shot. And
you lost any other friends since then?
I have several people that not just an association with on the streets. Like, I know a lot of people by face, such as yourself, and I'm a people person, but I just, for me, it's out of sight, out of mind until I see their face, because I've been on the streets myself since 99.
You know, I just interviewed some people with the AIDS Project who've been fired. Has the AIDS Project been very helpful to you over the last 5 years? Needle exchange, things of that sort.
Yeah, they actually are very, very considerate, yeah. And I find it that they got a lot of people in there to test at one point in time, because Santa Cruz funded it, a thing where they could do $10 if they went in and $10 to pick up their results. And I wish they could continue to keep someone, like, keep that funding going somehow, because I guess it was just for a general purpose thing, and they got the answer they were looking for. But 5 years ago, if you got 5 years ago, 5,000 people had hepatitis C. So today, that number is tripled. And on top of that,
Santa Cruz or national?
I think in Santa Cruz County alone. This is the only way we can test is in our own community.
How do you know that?
Well, it's just statistically 5,000 people 5 years ago. And I know myself, being an addict, getting paranoid because I've been in trouble for using drugs, that I get paranoid and I decide not to have clean rigs. And then I end up sharing with someone, and they swear they don't have Hep C, and I say, well, I know I don't, and then I find out later that they do, you know, or something like that. So,
and we're going to interrupt this interview, this taped interview, because we have a live phone call from Ralph Myberg, who's been checking things out around the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel Project, which he is a big supporter of, right, Ralph?
No. I'm a huge opponent of.
Indeed. Being facetious again, you just came from a meeting of SCRAP?
Yes.
And what's that about?
It's Santa Cruzans for Responsible Planning. It originated around stopping the Home Depot Lowe's projects coming in on the west side, and has been very involved in the implications of this huge conference center parking garage.
Well, I know when we spoke last, and hopefully we can get a longer interview because I know you're off to another meeting and you only got a few moments, we talked about how there is another city council meeting coming up this next Tuesday, at which the vote at the last one was 4-3 to push through the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel project. And one vote could change it, and then also within 30 days thereafter, a referendum at the city level could also reverse that decision. Has there been any movement on that? I noticed the Good Times and the Metro for 2 weeks have said absolutely nothing about either the referendum or the second vote of the city council, which people could show up at.
Mm-hmm. On the council meeting, it's this Tuesday, and when you have a zoning ordinance change proposed, you need two readings, and that's the reason for it. And even though it's not classified a public hearing, it has to take input from the public. So it could be a restricted hearing, but I strongly advocate for people who are against the hotel conference center parking garage proposal to get out there in force and be prepared to make their statements. And until that time, to really call your council people and make clear what your opinion is on this, and certainly emails or phone calls. I think you have the number, Robert. I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah, the number is 420-5020. Also, I talked to Leslie Cook, city clerk. Well, I got a message back from her. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, requested 5 minutes speaking time as an organization. Apparently the mayor is not allowing organizations 5 minutes. Everybody's going to get who knows what, but they're not going to get organizations don't get extended time as they have at traditionally in the past. Is this how it usually is at both hearings? I mean, I know at the first hearing, Rotkin apparently, according to one person, gave extra time to the organizations that were particularly favorable to the Coast Hotel project. But he also gave that time to those organizations which were opposed. Although they didn't get to speak twice, as I understand, I was told some of the pro organizations were able to speak twice. Did you notice this phenomenon at the?
It might have happened. You know, this is so much bigger than that issue that we should just look at where the future goes. You know, there's always a certain amount of favoritism, jockeying going on. Mm-hmm. So
sure.
don't really want to
go there.
Get too much into that.
Well, what happened this afternoon? What's anything? Any breaking news for us or any?
Yeah, I think that from this meeting, without getting into individual names, it was a lot of significant people that have played roles in the past in Santa Cruz, and you know, many past mayors and people that have been part of the Planning Commission and other community groups, and Sierra Club and Coastal Sierra Club, attorneys. So the consensus at this meeting was that it's time to go forward with a referendum, and that we have to give a very clear message to the City Council that their violation of the planning documents, and especially their absolute haphazard way of processing this, is not acceptable. For example, to make an amendment to the local coastal plan, especially with reference to design guidelines, the city has to petition the Coastal Commission to accept the amendments. Now, right now, the height under the coastal policy is 35 or 38 feet, with another allowance of about 10 feet if it's a proposed project, which this would classify as, so say 45, 46 feet. This project, even though the city has stated it's 75 feet high, they're measuring in an unorthodox way from the street level, and it needs to be average from the beach level, is over maybe, it could be as much as 100 feet. So the correct way for the city to have proceeded would have been first to amend the LCP and seek agreement on what their new height requirements and massing requirements and setback requirements might be, because they propose to change all of that in one fell swoop on this project. So, the Coastal Commission could simply set new guidelines that will not allow this project to go forward economically, or they might simply deny any type of change in the guidelines that we ourselves as a community established and submitted to the Coastal Commission as our guidelines.
Ralph, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this actually is covered extensively in, I guess, it's either the Good Times or the the Metro, a long article on the Coastal Commission, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, you know, a third avenue that is to be might be pursued as well as a referendum and then hopefully pressuring at this
Robert,
vote.
Let me just finish that one thought.
Sure,
because
go ahead.
I'm almost there.
Yeah.
Now, if the Coastal Commission doesn't agree to these changes under the local coastal plan, it made this entire process moot. In other words, all the expense, all the meetings, all the redevelopment money, all the staff gerrymandering, all the documents are absolutely useless. And it's a possibility, and it is totally inordinate for this city, given our cash-strapped position, to proceed with a project of this magnitude without first lining up its ducks. So I just want to put that out just as something that's really infuriating. There's other aspects of total waste of money in the way they have processed this, allowing for legal challenges, which also might be in the offing.
Let me just say this, Ralph, mm-hmm. that you what you have coming up here is you have a very short window for a referendum. I mean, I've suggested people call 420-5020 and ask the city council members, particularly the majority, to say even if you want to push this project, at least give people a time to talk about it for six weeks. Riley has said that, and that was her proposal.
Absolutely. We're hoping that...
But since they're not likely to do that, mm-hmm. and you're going to be forced to do a referendum, how can people best support you in preparing to assist in that referendum? Because you're not going to have much time. You're going to have, what, 30 days, right?
Yes. So, well, the first point first, call your council people, write to them, insist that they either put this up for a referendum, because the other issue, which is huge, is we're proposing to invest, they're calling it a $30 million bond over 20 or 30 years, but in fact it's $66 million of our money that is going to go into this project over that period. And that's by their own calculations of $2.3 million bond debt over 30 years. So do the arithmetic. So we're being asked to do that without a vote. And at the very least, the council should put up for referendum by themselves the opportunity for this for people in Santa Cruz who will be paying down the debt, or if it defaults, it'll be our problem, to at least vote on this matter. Plus the entire project.
But since they're unlikely to.
We're hoping that the council will accede to that and not force us to go through the expense and the trouble and the organization to put this on a referendum by gathering the required 3,900 votes.
Well, you actually think the council is going to do that? I mean, they're obviously going to – that'll be a referendum to overturn their own vote. How likely are they to support a referendum to do that?
Well, you know, an act of statesmanship, recognizing the deep divisions in the community. I think it's fair. People believe in participatory democracy. I'm sure that most people on that council have made that statement in the past. And this is most certainly a good way to involve the community in a legitimate debate on this project and see what the will of the people happens to be.
You know, I've heard you use the words participatory democracy, and I guess some of us used it back, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. I've never heard a council member use those words. Perhaps you have.
I have. You know, I think it underlies our entire system. I think in Santa Cruz we pride ourselves on involving the community in the discussions. And the argument that we never agree on anything is just not valid. We agree on a great many things. And the things we agree on are usually for the better of the community, and we've done a good job.
Any indication?
There's a lot of fallacious arguments, but that can be all sorted out in a healthy debate.
Any indication from council members that any of the council members will accede to the four and the majority will agree to a referendum on this issue?
Not really. I think that if people focus on you know, the council people and just ask for it, demand it as a right of the people, then possibly, especially one of the two new council people will accede. They certainly are not prepared for this, in my estimation. There's so much information. There's so many complications. There's the Coastal Act and the provisions mm-hmm. under that. And all these things will take place. You know, we're just totally out of order. And that was my original evaluation. This is a steamroller, and it's a very mesmerizing, mixed-up steamroller. So, you know, do I expect the council to do that? Very possibly. You know, I always hope for the best. I think it would be a very legitimate move to concur with the will of the people.
But assuming they don't, how can people get in touch with a referendum movement, or is that not yet put together?
An organization will be established, and signatures. We'll need people to help gather legitimate signatures. We'll have to bring in about 7,000 signatures to get the 3,900 absolutely certifiable
DeAnza,
that are registered voters.
DeAnza, I think, got even more.
They did.
Yeah.
So it's very possible. And, you know, the council could speed up this process and not involve so many members of the community in this effort by simply acceding to the will of the people and let the voice of the people decide this. As the city manager pointed out, this is a huge, huge thing for Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
and in that it involves so much of our money and so many other implications.
Or they could simply delay it for 6 weeks, as has been requested, and might get Riley on board and have a 5-2 majority.
That would make so much sense because, as I said, I don't think the council people have had the opportunity to sift through all the information, and I don't think they even understand all the implications. One thing is I think this happens in a small arena, and it's a little myopic because we're talking about affecting coastal policy. What we do here, in the end, we'll set new standards for coastal development. And if you see Santa Cruz, this wonderful environmental community, doing something so inordinate, it is not okay. So it's really worth opposing at all levels. And I really invite people to become invigorated, get into this debate, and let your voice be heard.
Is there a website where people can go for more information about this?
Oh, I'm sorry. Once again, Robert, I just called you in between meetings, and I don't have it.
Get back to us on Sunday.
Right in front of me, but I'm looking for it as we talk
okay.
to see if I can come up
people
with
can
it.
Also check out the Indie Media website. That's santacruz.indiemedia.org. There have been some articles on there. In fact,
okay, Robert, I actually do have
I
don't know if this is a website or just an email address. I'm not sure if there's a website set up on this, okay, but it's Santa Cruzans, that's one word, but capitalized S, capitalized C, for, capitalized, responsible, capitalized, or plan, capital P, at yahoo.com. So that's Santa Cruzans, S&C capitalized, for, capitalized, responsible, capital R, plan, at yahoo.com.
Okay. And so folks, if they want to, can email there. And no doubt there should be more information coming out.
Yes, there will be a lot of information as soon as the organization is set up. This is obviously purposefully being accelerated to prevent the community from expressing its will, and I'm truly hopeful that the council will understand how divisive and how traumatizing this thing is, and it should go to a vote of the people, and we propose to put it there.
Hey, Ralph.
We will put it there.
Well, let us know what else is cracking, and maybe you'll come in on Sunday and give us some more updates. Maybe we can have you and Scott Kennedy can fight it out in the studio.
Yeah. Okay. yes.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, and good luck with your next meeting.
Okay, Robert. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and hey, here's your opportunity to call in if you want on this issue or another. I'll wait briefly and see if anybody wants to pick up on this. I realize that for some who are listening to this show, concerned with sort of basic rights like sleeping and not being hassled by police, fighting these sort of futuristic battles about huge expenditures down the road and, blocking the view of West Side neighbors and, causing trouble for the folks in their expensive homes on the West Side is not the highest priority. But there are other issues, too, here, such as the destruction of 63 homes at the Clearview Court Motel, trailer park, which is had rent control stripped away from it and is now going to be the recipient of a huge parking structure shadowing much, certainly some of the building. There's some question as to how much of the mobile home park is going to be shadowed, but with apparent consequences in terms of health consequences, not just they won't be able to do sunbathing, but it actually impacts the ability of the trailers, the coaches, to deal with mold, to deal with rain. You can't sell these things for love or money, apparently, these days because of the destruction of rent control. There's no equity left in this stuff, so it's all a matter of waiting people out until they die or get tired of all this crap, and then the owners of the property will cash in big time, which is, of course, what some of us saw down the road earlier and spoke about, but the Kennedy-Rotkin-Matthews Council wasn't interested. I should say the Kennedy-Rotkin-Matthews-Porter Council. Porter did not oppose this in the final vote either, the destruction of rent control. Keep that in mind. Anyway, let's get back to this interview with Jennifer Olson. You may remember she was talking about the implications of the 911 situation for folks in heroin overdoses. And actually, I got a couple of comments on the Pages in Color website. The recommendation, this is, I'm reading from it, the recommendation of the Homeless Issues Task Force would have saved lives had the council enacted it. It was the one clear-cut policy that the Homeless Issues Task Force came up with that could be changed and save lives. I bet we could try to calculate just how many lives would have been saved since 1999. Huff should consider supporting, actually this is the second subject, should be consider supporting the referendum to decide the Coast Hotel Project. Yeah, Huff is already opposing the Coast Hotel Project because of its impact on Clearview Court, and I think also because of its impact on the availability of funding for other social welfare programs in Santa Cruz and how that would impact poor people. So let's hear a little bit more of this interview and see how it goes.
So far, I'm pretty sure I have Hep C, but my last test result, which was 3 months ago, came back negative. But I just think that I can't fathom why I wouldn't.
We've been talking with
Jennifer Olson.
Thanks, Jennifer. You're the man who went to the Hobo Convention in Britt, Iowa. Your name, sir?
Grant. They call me Grant Carter George.
And what happened at that convention?
We pick who's going to be the new Hobo King and the Hobo Queen. I almost...
Royalist stuff. How about the Hobo President? Or Hobo First Citizen? Or Hobo Comrade? Hobo Commissar?
Jim Miner is... Maynard, he's the mayor of Britt, Iowa. He's the mayor of the town. He's the mayor, and we have about 200 hobos that show up to it. And this year, we had a friend of mine that lives in Blue Spring, Missouri. Her name is Mama Jo. She's king of hobos. King of hobos?
She was crowned king of the hobos?
Yes.
Well, good for her. Good for her.
No,
all right.
And,
arrest that man. I believe he's a bus driver.
And I go to it every year. I go to it every year. Every year.
Now, are you a hobo or are you simply a hobo sympathizer?
Myself. Las Vegas, myself. I was back in February 20th, I was in the club fire with the band Great White. The heavy metal band that I played with for 3 years. And
is this a hobo band or is this
heavy
fire, right?
Yeah, it's Long Island.
Yeah.
I was the one that ran pyrotechnics, fireworks, and I got hurt in the fire.
Really? Wow.
Did you ever tell I tell you that?
No.
Yes. And Jack, I know Jack Russell, Great White. I'm a good singer.
So you were there the night the place burned down?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And the club owner got charged with manslaughter, and we went pyrotechnics with no fire permit that went against the FIA fire regulations.
How many people died in that fire?
107 died.
Wow.
Hey,
what year was that?
That was last year, February 20th.
Okay, it's about, around 12:30 on January 19th. I'm out here with
Kyle
and
DeVita.
And watching is Doug Bird. And you're a man with a guitar case sitting next to the statue. We can never quite say what this thing is across from the Cinema 9. Are you new in town?
Yes.
You get a bit of your music for free radio?
Sure.
We can't pay you anything.
That's all right.
All right, go for it.
Monica Moonbeam lives on the sandbeam, works in a garden. your mind. Counting the daisies, lifted the crazy, she can tell it's satisfied. Oh, Monica Moonbeam's mine. Who loves Monica? Who loves Monica? Monica Moonbeam's mine.
Here's a man who played so vigorously that the A string popped on him. How long you been on the street playing?
Well, thank you.
How long you been on the street playing?
I don't know, a couple of years probably. I've been jamming for 10. But
how long you been singing on the street?
Oh, a couple months maybe. I just met him a little while ago.
You're picking up singing from him, or he's picking up his best acts from you?
Probably both. Yeah.
And how do you guys find the streets of Santa Cruz? Friendly to musicians, unfriendly, mixed?
Very friendly, very friendly.
Very nice, very friendly.
How long have you been out here?
About a month.
You come out how often on the street?
Twice a week, maybe.
And how much money would you say you average per hour out here? Is there an average?
Low. Pretty low, probably. But
for most musicians, even good ones, it's pretty low.
Maybe $5.
And how much does a string cost?
$2 by itself, $5 for a pack.
Wow. And you're pointing to your guitar case, which has how many broken strings in it?
I don't know, 6.
Is this guy just a perennial string breaker? What's the story?
He breaks strings very frequently because he plays very aggressively.
And he gets some people who are very appreciative of his music. I noticed somebody just put another dollar or $2 in his guitar case.
A lot of the people that are really appreciative are usually older people that appreciate like classic rock a lot.
That's what your primarily repertoire is, classic rock?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is like songs that he wrote or I wrote or both of us wrote together, and then some of them are covers.
Are you guys sleeping indoors or outside?
We're sleeping in a water tower right now.
Whoa. I will say no more.
Yeah, it's a cool place to live.
Thank you. We've been talking with...
What?
Your name again.
Oh, DeVita.
Thanks, DeVita. And who is this scoundrel with a New York t-shirt? What's your name again?
Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle. And what is that instrument you're playing again?
It is a steel pan from Trinidad and Tobago.
You yourself are probably from the same place?
I'm from the same country.
And how are the police treating a musician of your noteworthiness on the street?
They don't give me no trouble. They don't give me no trouble. I love you to do the right thing. They simply run 7 inches from the pavement, so they don't give me no trouble.
As long as you stay into the outside, the forbidden zone.
Yeah, they don't give me no trouble. Thank you very much for you.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Kenneth Christian.
Okay, this is a continued interview, 10 to 1 on January 19th, here in front of the beautiful Gala Cabana in downtown Pacific Avenue with Scotty Hart. And Scotty, you're a musician, but you don't bring your banjo to the SAFE event, and there's a reason for that.
Well, because I believe that they've got it to the point where now it's only like a public jam. The cops don't take it seriously. The political figures in town don't take it seriously. And even then, the street musicians as a whole don't take it too seriously because it only draws a caliber of musicians which are, they've been shunned from downtown because they can't play music, or they've been shunned from downtown because the expression of their music is not, it's too loud. They broke the noise ordinance, or these are things that they've said things in a political sense, which they've shot them down to the end of the mall. It's kind of like that's where you go if you're stuck down at the end of the mall without anything to say.
Well, some of the musicians I've heard are pretty good. I mean, for example, we got Joe Williams, yeah. Valerie Christie, Valerie Promise. In fact, the Core, I think, are pretty. It is a free and open. You can step up and play there, even if you aren't the most seasoned professional.
Oh, yeah. But I agree with that as far as it being there. But the format of it is just basically a jam. There's no political figures that come down and stand there and look in front of it to even see if they're taking the musicians or the art seriously. There's something that's got to be done. If you're going to do something, go stand on the cop's front step. Stand there with your instrument. Play it loud enough where they'll actually come out and wonder what you're doing. Not just, to stand at the end of a street where your ability to draw any kind of person or a political agenda is on the other side of town.
So that's one suggestion. So any other suggestions for this group if they wanted to have the community take more seriously, or let's say the authorities take more seriously, or both, the attempt to change the downtown ordinances and the policies of the police of apparently harassing musicians like yourself?
Well, the way you could go about doing that is that they've done that in a lot of different places. Like, I've been in Gainesville and Ocala, and I've also been in New Orleans and Lake Charles and Biloxi, Mississippi, which the ways they got around that with the street music scene was is that they got a collective of musicians that were fairly good to mediocre, and they got a studio to donate time, and they made a CD, and they stood in front of all these businesses instead of playing music. And they stood there as a protest instead of playing music, handing out these CDs, why they can't. And what it does, it brings up a public awareness. Once you spark public awareness, it's very simple. That public awareness to trickle on downhill to that public servant awareness. Because enough public awareness, the theory of shit trickles downhill. That's what it does. You know, that little bit gets in their ear, and pretty soon, if you got 15 taxpayers screaming in one congressman's ear about one musician that handed out that they can't hear no more, then it becomes an issue of what they're affecting, the ambience. When the old Pacific Garden Mall used to be here, this held such a sacred ambience for street musicians. I mean, people from all over the world used to come here. People from all over the world don't come here anymore.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, Artist the Spoon Man. I remember when Rooster Tail Bob from New Orleans used to come down here and play before the earthquake happened here. I remember when Patti Smith would come down here and jam with her freelance band. I was here the day that Ramblin' Jack Elliott stood down here right in front of the Catalyst and played out there for the street. You should have seen the people. You're talking about appreciation? Big difference. Have you seen one of those people in this town since 1998? No. And the reason why is because the police harassment. The appreciation.
1998 or 1989?
1998
was 89 was the earthquake when they removed the Pacific Garden Mall.
Yeah, but 98 was the last time you saw Patti Smith come here.
So, again, this is part two of an earlier interview, but I'm concerned that the interview is separated, and so I just want to recap the fact that you yourself, in the course of your banjo playing, you have your banjo on your back here, you've suffered harassment, contact, and or ticketing with local police officers. How many times now?
Four.
And how many times in the last couple?
I've been coming here 16.
And that's a total of how many years?
Oh, but that's since pre-earthquake.
So in the last year, let's say.
In the last year, four times.
And has this all been at the hands of Pam Bechtel?
No. Pam is just one of the ones that likes to play enforcer.
That was the most recent incident in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, where you were playing what is supposedly a protected zone, but a complaint from some anonymous person had her coming out and telling you that move along or else?
Or else. That was the term.
Of course, police have always had the power to harass musicians by using so-called excessive noise ordinances, and the musician, of course, is in a vulnerable position because they can say, look, if an individual inside the store wishes to file an excessive noise complaint against me, they can certainly do so. I don't feel I'm playing excessively, but they have to stand and accept, and take the ticket, and the officer could presumably threaten to confiscate the individual's instrument.
Absolutely. That is what I've been told twice, that they could take my instrument due to the fact that I had broke the noise ordinance. And that's with a banjo. I have no amplification at all. But a banjo is a fairly noisy instrument, but I've also seen steel drum players and bagpipe players that stood here for hours and never once get harassed.
No commissioners allowed. You have your banjo with you.
Yeah.
Are you interested in giving us a quick song?
How about if I do it on the air for you?
Okay. Would you like to come to the studio? Let me ask Jeff how he feels about having a second instrument in the studio. So,
and actually, that interview resulted in Scotty's coming to the studio and doing some singing and also doing some talking, and that was about, I guess, a week and a half ago. Not quite sure exactly when it was. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, and some interesting commentary there by Scotty on what the role of SAFE and the SAFE events every Wednesday night has been. And I'm always rather restless to see some action taken to restore street performers' rights to be free from the harassment of people like Pam Bechtel and the hosts and any particular merchant or, frankly, cranky resident who decides they want to complain about a street performer, and then their word is law, even if there, you know, there's no significant disturbance of the peace or even unreasonable noise, but police are acting as though, you know, the other side doesn't have equal power and equal rights, and of course they don't, given the way the city council has proceeded in this whole matter. So that's an issue for me, and I'm concerned that simply going to an event every Wednesday and playing music on the sidewalk is not doesn't really take back a lot of space. Although we have taken back that space. And we had a year's worth of 53 Wednesdays on the sidewalk, and that was something. I mean, the police avoid our event, I think, because they don't they don't want to mess with an obviously popular and well-behaved group of performers who are only there for a short period of time. But the downside is that we don't provide any real threat in terms of the existing unjust order that menaces musicians the rest of the time when they're alone, when they get hassled by people. In the studio with me is heralded guitarist, singer, pianist, and a well-known cellist, Tim Ahern. Actually, he's none of any of that. But
I've got six instruments, but that's not one of them.
Oh, well,
the cello I cannot play.
Oh, really? Well, you got to bring your instruments next time.
I'd be happy to. I've written a couple of union songs I'd love to sing.
Wow. Well, you can sing them a cappella if you want. I won't stop you.
I'd love to have my accompaniment. Thank you.
Wow. Well, I know that the reason I asked you to come to the studio was because you are kind of doing a lot of pinch hitting. You're running from organization to organization, trying to do things like stop the war in Iraq, restore sort of some rights for you're with in-house home care,
in-home support services.
In-home support services, which is
IHSS, which is the final safety net for people who have about less than $3,000 in assets to their name. It's a state-funded program. It takes care of your daily needs and allows you to stay at home rather than go into a managed care facility, which costs infinitely a larger amount of money for the state or whoever ends up paying for it.
This is an SEIU union?
Yes, the SEIU organized the home care workers, I guess, about 5 or 6 years ago, and it was a statewide idea to organize us all, and we respond to a state home care council that tries to advocate for us, in particular now.
And you have a local organization that's trying to do what?
At this time, the governor has once again tried to cut our wages from $9.50 down to $6.75 to minimum wage.
We don't need all that money.
Yeah, we don't need all that money. And also not contributing for health care. Gray Davis's Aging with Dignity Act provided a trigger, a growth trigger. And if the state grew past 5%, we were promised an extra dollar an hour for our care services. It was considered a trigger. And that trigger has been met, but, of course, Governor Schwarzenegger is reticent to pull it. It's the only trigger he's ever been reticent to pull.
Yes.
I'll be back just a moment.
So at this time, I'm going basically from group to group, working on war issues because it's entirely relevant because that's where a lot of the money and financing, of course, is going. But also trying to get support, coalition support for this cause. I've been to the Seniors Commission and the Commission on Disabilities and several different organizations of people we serve. because they know best what we do. I mean, we have workers who work right up to the end of life with clients, and as they die, their IHSS worker can be holding their hand where maybe their family is not able to for whatever reason. We're collecting these stories, and we're going to be bringing them out into the public, into the governor, and we want people to know what we do for $9.50 an hour.
And you've actually intersected with other, with HUF, Homeless United for Friends
sure.
and Freedom, on other issues, like, for example, the Jerry Henry exclusion from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. You want to
absolutely. Jerry's care providers have been arrested or detained or ticketed. I don't want to be inaccurate in my depiction, but I believe that if they were performing their duties as is within the IHSS contract and within what we call our memorandum of understanding,
helping Jerry in a conspiracy to get a cup of coffee.
Right, to get a cup of coffee. If this is within the...
They should be thrown into jail with Jerry
with Jerry and drawn and quartered. But we are allowed to go to nearby stores and do shopping for clients, whatever specific items they want. There are some guidelines with that. And providing the workers have met those guidelines, then the union or the in-home support services have attorneys that certainly should be stepping up and helping these people, because it's not right for someone to be arrested in performance of their job duties.
What are you doing, you know, supporting questionable bums with long hair that are giving trouble to good middle-class coffee distributors?
I can only hope that that humanity will triumph over all, and that's exactly why someone like Jerry is so important to society. He creates a beautiful way for people to grow. He takes care of people who are at risk and who are really at a turning point in their lives, and if nothing else, he really just gives them a perspective that they didn't have before. He's a pretty amazing guy.
We're talking about Jerry Henry, in case you haven't been listening to the last 48 shows. This issue comes up every other show or so. He's been arrested on first $25,000, then $50,000 bail in the last half year at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, and again at the Aptos Center right to the north of Rancho Del Mar, for the crime of walking into first the Pacific, or having his aide go into the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company, the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, it's called, the Colleen Crosby run store in the Rancho Del Mar, and then there's another one called the Pacific Coffee Company and the Aptos Center up right above that. And as you said, he's been credited by many of his friends and supporters with helping young people get off of heroin, advising them of their rights to be in public spaces, even if merchants and some overzealous First Alarm security guards and Santa Cruz deputies want to run them out of the area.
What, treating youth like human beings? Stop.
Yeah, or suggesting human beings, you know, assert their rights to continue to be human beings without being run out of the area just because a certain perspective is taken toward them because of the way they dress or look or their age or whatever.
It's very important. Jerry is a voice in the wilderness of conformity, and we're all so docile and so compliant with the rules of society, and Jerry believes in the rule of humanity above the rule of society, and there's a certain we have a need for that right now in this time. People need to look at that as something that will save us from what society is creating in terms of the divisiveness of we're all separate. If you're in Santa Cruz, you're living on the best that there is, and the rest of the time, or either that or you're at the bottom of the chain. And the people in the middle, I find, get a little of the best, and then you're just completely, and again, you're just down on the bottom the rest of the time. So I'm...
So if you get to either of these coffee shops, which is, again, the Pacific Coffee Roasting Company in the Aptos Center, or the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company in the Rancho Del Mar Center next to Safeway, you might register your concern with the management that you'd like to see people who are being unfairly excluded allowed back in. You, however, have had a lot of experience in another area that interests me. I know that I may have mentioned on the air, I think I probably did. Maybe I didn't. Yes, I think I did. I ran into our new council member, Tony Madrigal, the other day. There's a human rights organization meeting every Saturday. That's the group concerned with ending the sleeping ban and the downtown ordinances. It's a small but persistent group that wants to. It's going before the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors. We've talked about that on the air. The group that does a lot of social services for homeless people, except the shelter services are completely inadequate, and the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors has not yet, in its long history, come out against the sleeping ban. And the human rights organization is trying to get that to happen, and that's going to be happening later in February, maybe, or at least it'll be discussed on the agenda, particularly the lawsuit that the Huff and Human Rights Organization, and maybe the in-home...
Sure. Well, it crosses over for me because I'm aware of a dozen home care workers that are, in fact, homeless. They're either living part-time with their client, which is not allowed, or, you know, here I go, giving away the secrets, but basic, or living in their car. And
illegal in Santa Cruz.
Illegal, again.
The lawsuit is concerned with throwing out the two laws, the sleeping ban and the blanket ban that criminalized this in the city limits after 11 o'clock at night.
Sure.
So Tony Madrigal is the only city council member who has said he would recently, actually in the last election, who said that he would consider putting the sleeping ban on the agenda because of his humanitarian sympathies, or maybe I think he may have said he'd been in a car himself. I think Rotkin has said he's slept in a car.
Camping enthusiast.
He's a camping enthusiast. And I've expressed some skepticism whenever I bring the matter up with Tony. He starts moving the other way, heads for the bathroom, tries to make a joke, says, are you going to be nice to me? He has a number of kind of retorts, which have nothing to do with the issue. I mean, he could simply say, I'm not going to do it now, Robert. It's too dangerous for me. He could give me a straight answer, but he hasn't so far. And he is still he's a new council member, but I want to point out that new council members have taken strong stands in 1989. Don Lane brought up the sleeping ban, and when he was shot down, never did anything about it for the next 15 years. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, he at least brought it up initially. He then became mayor 3 years later. Crone and Sugar, both council members and both then mayors subsequently, tried to have the sleeping ban suspended in the winter of 1998-99. They failed on a 5-2 vote, Fitzmaurice and Byers turning tail on that issue. But they tried. Porter has not done anything. At one point he claimed he tried to put the sleeping ban on the agenda, and Fitzmaurice, his Green Party pal, wouldn't help him. And since that time, Porter is simply, at the last election, for example, he said he now opposes changing the sleeping ban. He realizes that sleep is not really a necessary human commodity; it's a luxury. If you can't afford it, you know, get out of town, I guess, is what the deal is. But I know you've been looking at getting the sleeping ban repealed through various ways. You've come to Huff meetings. You've been seen consorting with Community Homeless Alliance ministry members over in San Jose.
We love them.
But you have a particular sense of Tony Madrigal because Madrigal has been involved in numerous union activities. He is, in fact, a union organizer for SEIU. What's the story there?
He's a representative for SEIU, which part of his job would be organizing the chapter that he represents, which in this case is Home Care, which is the IHSS chapter. So we do have some experience with him in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you came to the last Huff meeting and you said...
Oh, yes.
You mentioned that at that meeting that Tony expressed no particular interest in proceeding, at least carrying the SEIU has come out. Has the SEIU come out against the sleeping ban?
I don't think so. And as we talked about at the Huff meeting, I think it's really important that we get that up onto the agenda. And I've talked to the secretary up there about putting that on. So it should go on. There shouldn't be a problem with that. I think it's very important that working people support what's going on with this. This is a really, really bad situation. For all, the city workers are employees of SEIU, or are members of SEIU, and it's likely at some point they're going to be discovering bodies, and it's just not acceptable that someone should have to deal with that in the course of their job. I had meant to ask you who had found the last person on the halls of the city.
You know, it was a police officer, I believe.
It's a police officer.
Actually, I know his name, but it escapes me right now. At least I think I know a police officer made a report about it. It might have been a city worker that found the body.
This is something we don't want workers to have to deal with, and it's just ridiculous from a justice standpoint.
Well, Mike Rotkin would tell you, hey, you know, if we let the sleeping ban be repealed, then you'll have all kinds of bodies appearing everywhere because people will be able to sleep without fear of being arrested, and it won't just be open suicides that lie down at night without any blankets. It will be, you know, people just overdosing right and left and all kinds of things that... Giving a little devil's advocate.
Oh, yes.
Argument. But let me get back to the SEIU argument.
Please.
I don't. By the way, those arguments I don't believe they have much validity. But
mm-hmm.
Tony Madrigal, if you approached him and asked him to consider, at least as an SEIU organizer, raising the issue. As a council member, he's claimed he's willing to put the issue on the agenda. And I think somewhere somebody said he's willing to be a second, but not past the.
I don't know about that. He's also the political director for the union. All political activity is supposed to be coordinated through him. So which explains why we don't demonstrate against the war or homelessness or anything very relevant.
Well, so have people tried to propose such demonstrations and been shot down by Tony Madrigal?
Well, I don't know if it's personally been shot down by him, but I know there's been a growing movement within the SEIU 415. Labor for Peace was involved directly with the counter-inaugural on the 20th. But the union itself, particularly coming from the staff, doesn't seem motivated to participate in any what you'd call national-level political activities. They were very active in getting Tony elected. I mean, I think that was very important to them. And we did very well on some of the local slates, on some of the local issues, putting in folks on the school boards and folks that we supported locally really did very well, which shows that we have a certain amount of clout in the area in terms of turning out voters and getting the trees organized. But there has been a huge absence, just this giant void where we could have really been incredibly – having a network that's led by the political director in this case, which would be Tony.
How long has he been political director?
I don't know. Before I got there, I've been there a couple of years, and he was political director before I was. I would use the
warming a chair there for 2 years.
Yeah. Is that right? I would use the Coast Hotel as a perfect example, in that we had a committee on political education meeting where the staff was looking for an endorsement on this hotel, and we went through the process, but there was a member present at the meeting who said, hey, you can't do this. Your bylaws say you have to get out there and tell your membership what it is that you're doing, so that the endorsement is legal.
Did this person say that because she or he was opposed to what looked like the result, or because they were a stickler for rules?
They were very much concerned about the raise in height of the hotel and the changes in zoning. They're a county person, so they're pretty aware about what it could mean for that entire coastline. It's not just if they change the zoning, it's not just for that little piece of land, it's for the zoning all along that area. So there's a lot of problems that can result from that. And he was mostly concerned as well that he was not being represented, and that an endorsement from our union would not be representative of the membership. That was his opinion. And
you can get the members turned out in such huge numbers.
There was two at the meeting. Technically two, because
all these guys with C yes signs running around, little buttons, and, and union member after union coming saying this is a great project. Or maybe it's not the SEIU. I'm thinking of the different other unions.
We didn't see a lot of SEIU turnout.
I'm thinking of other unions, perhaps.
Probably the Carpenters Union was really for it. And I'm not sure. When I went to the meetings, I didn't see folks. And then at the meeting where it was going to be passed, which was the last one where
Tuesday,
where I was basically accosted by the union staff.
Tell me about that.
Oh, Lord. These days. I was down at the meeting and had come from
the first 4-3 vote supporting it after the two long evenings of discussion.
Oh, after the two long evenings of discussion. Well, to go back, the initial vote that we had tried to have to endorse this through the committee was said to be we couldn't do it.
Were you on the committee?
I was on the COPE committee. It's for political education, and it was ruled by the executive director that in fact we couldn't make the endorsement without informing the members and having them come in and weigh in and vote on it.
And what would that involve?
That would involve probably 2 weeks prior, minimum of 2 weeks prior, sending out announcements that this was going to be the issue that would be on the agenda at that COPE meeting. Mm-hmm. 300 of the 500 COPE members are home care workers. They were essentially signed up by Tony when they signed their union cards. And yet a lot of us don't come to meetings. We're underrepresented at the meetings themselves, but also in the agenda of what COPE is trying to do. So it's going to be in the future a much more home care driven project, because in talking to people, they're very interested in getting involved. Home care has gone from two executive board members now to a full boat of 7. Plus, we have a vice president who's seated on the officers' committee.
And how many people are in the
world? The executive board represents 18 chapters, and it's probably 30-plus members. But we've built some wonderful alliances with the other chapters by meeting with them, talking about our issues and their issues. So just to wrap it all through, the idea of the staff at that point when we found out that it was not legal to endorse through the COPE committee would be to get the message out, let the people know that there is going to be a vote at the executive board, but the executive board works differently. They don't have to have the members. So there was no outreach. There was no political education. There was no...
Are you on the executive board yourself?
I am on the executive board. I've been on the executive board as a home care worker longer than I've been active in the chapter. But It was one of those things where, Tony, I came to him with a problem. Someone else had claimed my hours and gotten paid. And if that happens to you as a worker, if whatever check, whatever time card was received by the state first is the one that's cashed, and your only option with our wonderful contract is you have to sue your client, take them to small claims court, and then your client has to sue the worker that they had working for them, also in small claims, in order to get this money back.
What genius does it design this thing?
There is no language in our contract to protect us from this at all. And so we're working on a system for that. There's so much we're working on. So my belief in the whole idea is that when we got to the executive board meeting, they moved this Coast Hotel agenda item right up to the front. It bypassed all other business, even though it wasn't even on the agenda until after 8 o'clock. They wanted it passed and out of there by 7 o'clock. Our meeting started at 6, and we spent the next 50 minutes talking about it.
Who's they?
The members of the executive board.
And who were they?
There are representatives from every of the 18 chapters.
Who are the prime movers?
Leslie Scanagata and Leslie Auerbach are city chapter members. Leslie Scanagata is the union rep for the city and for SEIU. The technicality with that, of course, is they have their own chapter also within our union. So they're not only staff, they're also members. It provides an interesting sort of balance for them.
Now, was there much opposition to the Coast Hotel?
The vote came out at, I believe, 17-4. I'm going to say 6 against. And there were
you were one of those 6?
I was, and there was 4 abstentions. My purpose in voting against it was not as much to protest the hotel itself, although my feelings on that were pretty clear in the meeting, but that I was a representative there of my chapter of 1,200 people, and that without consulting them, I couldn't cast a vote for anyone other than myself, and I was being asked to cast a vote representative of my chapter.
And what did you make that argument on that?
I certainly did. And
what
I feel,
was the response?
I feel like a lot of people heard it. A lot of the e-board members heard it.
They ignored it, right?
Well, in a sense, I think that my approach is a little too strong. I use the word ramrod, and I believe that...
Steamroller.
Yeah, I believe that was... At that point, I think I may have lost a little bit of the support that I may have gotten from some people because the obvious energy and charge that I feel around being treated that way is pretty bad in terms of how I feel about it inside.
What was Tony Madrigal's role in any of this?
Tony came in and out. He's usually pretty much in and out of those meetings. He's not usually an active part of that. And he had to be at the meeting. He had to be at the city council meeting that night.
Well, it happened the same night as the
It happened
council.
The same night as... That's an interesting thing that we have that. The last Tuesday is usually the fourth Tuesday. There's a city council meeting and there's...
So it was a, it sounds like it was a hasty process in more ways than one, not just at the city council level, but also at the union level.
At the union level. So I went down after the executive board meeting vote to see what they were going to do with it at the city level. So there was 3 folks down there with signs, the 2 Leslies and a really nice man named Paul who works for the Central Labor Council.
Paul Johnson.
Paul has been really active in Vets for Peace and working on Speak Out, Veterans Speak Out, trying to get people out of the service. He was with us in Chicago at the U.S. Law, the U.S. Labor Against the War Conference, and he's a really strong voice for peace in and I think he will also be an ally with the homeless issue as well once we get him on board with it.
But he's a big supporter of the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel.
But he's a big supporter of the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel. So when I arrived down at the meeting, some good friends, Francis, who we love, and Sherry Connable, immediately stuck a yellow sticker on my shirt, purple SEIU shirt.
Which said,
no or go slow.
Right, on the Santa Cruz Coast
on
Hotel.
On Santa Cruz side, and I got in the line to talk to see what was going on.
And I remember seeing you, and I think I told you that you couldn't talk on the issue because they closed all debate.
Right, because they closed
you brought it
all
up
debate.
In oral communication.
In oral communication. Right. So I was trying to see whether or not the endorsement was going to be used in any way. found out when the when it's going to be on the agenda. But in the meantime, when I was spotted by the rep, Leslie, she came over and said, you can't wear that shirt and that tag at the same time. She was very...
Your shirt said...
My shirt said SEIU.
Right.
And the tag said nowhere, go slow.
Right.
She was basically trying to bully me to either get out of there or take the tag off or toe the line.
What did you say to her?
I asked her why she was so angry and pretty much tried not to engage on that level of getting into a spirited debate about the issue, because the issue immediately became, how can a professional person who's paid to be there at a job act in a way like that? There's so many wonderful ways to handle it. I mean, taking someone aside or or being just more personable, more professional. You don't even have to really be nice if you're professional, I think is the way it goes these days. So it was an interesting experience.
Did you take off your button?
I did not take
did
off
you
the
take
tag.
Off your shirt?
I did not take off my shirt, the little Medea.
And what did Leslie sit down and relax?
They went back over to the other side of the room and stood with the signs in support, which... I don't think there's anything wrong with supporting something that you believe in, but this is it should be supported in positivity and in, you know.
But did you feel that there was a kind of something inappropriate was happening? I guess I'm concerned about. I began talking to you about Tony Madrigal's role here. He's on the council.
Yes.
I was rather negatively impressed by his unwillingness to really. Not just raise the sleeping ban issue, but give a straight answer on the Coast Hotel issue.
He usually will refuse a straight answer if he's uncomfortable with the question or if he doesn't know what the answer is. He'll give a lot of round, and he'll go round and round with you endlessly. He won't stop. It's a skill that I believe that he was taught, and the executive director of our union is the same way. He'll ask you the same question over and over again, trying to keep bringing it around and around until you get tired. Wear you down. We are not, as leaders, we're not educated. We are frustrated. We are told no, 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 in order to create the angst to move us forward so that we learn whatever lessons it is that we're supposed to learn. Where what we really have is this incredibly great group of people who have a lot of energy, who need the leadership of union folks who have the experience to bring us forward. And we're very fortunate. We just hired someone. Who is one of the most, I wish I had my biography over here, who's this fan, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. She's one of the most amazing people I've met in terms of organizing people at our level. She's got more than 15 years experience, and her main strength is education and internal organizing, which is just what we need. So I don't want to let too much out of the bag, but we're going to be definitely asking her to be involved with the home care chapter as some form of representative.
Now, you work for a group called Labor for Peace.
Yes.
When do they and where do they meet?
We have not met since the 20th. We ordinarily meet at 517.
There's no need
the
to
war
worry.
Is over, yeah. Sure. We usually meet at 517 Mission Street on Friday nights, and it's usually the second Friday of the month, but I'm not sure that we have a meeting scheduled right now.
Nothing for tomorrow?
Nothing for tomorrow.
The first Friday of the month.
No, something's going on at the Vets Hall tomorrow night, some films on voter rights. And,
they may have mentioned it at the show immediately prior to this one.
Sure. Really, great stuff. So we're going down there. Last night I went to a great basket burning.
The basket burning?
Yeah, the Live Oak Grange. And some wonderful women put together this basket that was big enough for a lot of people to crawl into. But because it's halfway between the equinox and the solstice, the solsquinox or the... all of your cares, all of the things that you've been holding back, all of the things that have been holding you back, you put them into the basket, and we burned that basket down on the beach.
Burn,
it was
baby,
beautiful.
Burn.
Played the drums and got naked and danced around, and it was just a tremendous...
a co-educational deal?
Oh, yes, a great ceremony.
Wow.
Women, men, women, and children, and really great storytelling. There's this whole concept of the oral tradition of storytelling that when you hear a great storyteller, something happens. There's this little magic weaving that goes on around everybody, and there's that silence where they're hanging on the pauses. And so it was a really wonderful event. I'm way digressing now. Huh?
That's okay. You're listening to Tim Ahern, who's a vicious rebel in the SEIU ranks. In-home care workers?
In-home support service workers.
In-home support service workers.
We are just a loving, amazing group of human beings that make people's quality of life so much better. I mean, there's stories about workers who are bad, but
You did bring the sleeping band to Tony Madrigal and asked him to forward it in the SEIU kind of bureau.
I have not formally sat down with Tony and brought to him the sleeping band and asked him to do that, but I am very willing to do that.
You intend to do that?
I intend to do that, and it should come up in a number of different venues. It'll come up in Watsonville next week at the chapter meeting, that's for sure. I'll be talking to the other chapter members.
Is that a public meeting, or is it only for members?
This one's a member meeting. I mean, the public can come, but they can't participate. They would just be observers. We would want to acknowledge and recognize them, and for me, since I've been running the meetings and I've been running the chapter, it's very different from when Tony was running it. It was usually about an hour and a half of him talking last time, and now I like to open the meetings and get to the people and find out how everyone's doing and if there's problems we can deal with from members that are having right now that we can deal with right there. And almost without fail, everyone who has brought something forward, another member who's there, has offered the solution, and things work.
How many people meet at these meetings?
It depends on the location. The Watsonville meeting is terrific. South County has a great spirit because there are a lot of family providers.
And that's coming up tomorrow night?
That's coming up Monday night.
Monday night.
Monday night at 6 o'clock at the Union Hall on Alexander Street.
And what's the address?
I don't know what number Alexander Street, but it's just a very small peninsula. If you take a left down Alexander, you end up right back on the road again, so you really can't miss it. There's a restaurant and a market. It's across the street from the great hot dog stand in Watsonville where you can get those.
Head for the hot dog stand at 6 o'clock on Monday if you want to check out. Are you actually going to bring up the sleeping ban issue there?
Yeah, we will be talking about homelessness, the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, and I need to get some information about what's going on down in Watsonville too. But we've had a fire recently at the hotel next to the services building, and that's a building where the IHSS workers go to drop off their time cards and to talk with whatever social workers they need to speak with and things of that nature. So we've provided a drop box, or I should say the county has provided a drop box, so that can be taken care of. But even when the clients who were in that hotel were moved and displaced, their workers still found them, still stayed with them, and are still doing their jobs for them. So, I mean, it's a really dedicated group of people.
I know that there was, of course, Human Rights, Last Rights Day that we had here in Santa Cruz on December 10th or 12th or something. And the vice mayor of Watsonville was there. Supposedly, he told activist Becky Johnson that he was in favor of ending the sleeping ban in Watsonville.
And, terrific.
Well, if it were true, it would be wonderful. And who knows? Maybe it's true. I, frankly, was quite skeptical when I heard that. But then again, when have I not been?
It's murder. Sleeping ban is murder. I don't think we can stress strongly enough that it's the controlled killing of a human being if they're exposed to the elements in that way. I mean, we can't ignore that. I think it's murder.
Hey, look, if seven council members can ignore it for 77 years, then why can't you? Come on, show some punch here.
It's all about your thinking, you know. We either accept an idea or we don't accept the idea. If it's just a thought, we don't accept it. It goes right through our minds. But if we hold on to it and think about it and look at the reality of it, not try and put a bunch of imagination on top of it, but look at the reality of what we're seeing. A sleeping ban, once you hold that thought in your mind and realize what it means, it's essentially a death sentence for whoever is being forced onto it.
Well, for those who want to join you at this meeting,
sure.
I guess it's again 6 p.m. Monday, Union Hall in Watsonville on Alexander Street.
Alexander Street,
across
which
from
is downtown.
The hot dog stand.
The beautiful hot dog stand. We're also going to be talking about the Home Care Council contribution. They've asked us for $3 per member, and I believe it's per year, for a total of about $36,000 for a donation to make commercials and to fight Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is another example of, we were told, you need to pass this at your meeting. And I said, well, we need to talk to our membership. And I was told, well, you need to pass this at your meeting. I said, well, we need to talk to the membership. And I was told, well, you need to pass this at your meeting. So,
and what about the membership on the SEIU issue? I mean, I'm not the SEIU issue, the Coast Hotel issue.
Yeah.
Have you considered taking it to the membership directly?
That's all we can do at this point. But the endorsement from the executive board is made. There's nothing we can do except challenge. We can overturn it. It would take a lot to overturn it at this point. We're looking at the process.
Because I know that we just talked earlier in the air with Ralph Myberg, who called in, who says there's definitely, he believes, going to be a referendum when the city council passes this by a 4-3 vote again this Tuesday for the second confirming time. There will be a referendum launched. So presumably people at the SEIU level could do the same thing. They could launch a referendum against it.
I think we should find out if
Let's
that's possible.
This could be Leslie calling in to challenge you.
That would be lovely.
Hi there. You are, I think, on free radio. Hello?
Hey, Robert. How you doing? It's Andrea.
Hey, Andrea.
I'm listening to your show, man.
Yeah?
Hey, I just wanted to call in and tell that gentleman that's there, bless his heart, man, for that in-home support group. You know, it sounds like a really great group of people. Maybe someday I'll be eligible and I'll be able to have more access to those kinds of services, but I think it's really great that they're doing that, and it's nice to hear some positive notes on that there are some good in-home support workers. And
thank you.
And good-looking, too, I might add.
Hey, get your hand off of me.
Gosh, you know, what about that governor? Oh, every time I hear about him, it just kind of breaks my heart, you know, kind of puts me in a bad mental space because I keep hearing about how he's trying, supposedly getting more federal money to all these different places, but then I keep hearing on top of that for the money that he's spending is like not even coming close. I mean,
Andrea, weren't you?
What did happen to like feeding the poor and housing the homeless?
No. Those are irrelevant tasks. We leave that to the Catholic Charities.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea, didn't we talk about medical marijuana at one point?
Yeah.
And how is that going for you? I know that, I mean, that's.
I haven't even been able to look into it, but I just saw my doctor this last Friday to ask him about the Marinol capsules because I told him I've, you know, had the door slammed in my face as far as the medical marijuana clubs. And he told me that basically I either have to radically lose weight or I have to be HIV positive to be eligible for the Marinol capsules.
Huh.
And
I
don't know where that's going
to
go, but
it seems to me it's
a
matter of getting
even 100. Had anything for the last like 3 to 4 weeks.
Maybe it's a matter of getting $100, going to a doctor, getting a letter of recommendation, and then hoofing it up to Oakland or San Francisco or maybe San Jose. And I guess there's some places on the outskirts of Santa Cruz, not in Santa Cruz, because that's the city council has made it very difficult to open a place there. There is no distribution centers in the city limits.
Yeah, I know, and you know things are so tough right now. Because, you know, I'm still, like, lagging on welfare. I just got another denial notice from the Social Security Administration yesterday telling me that I'm not disabled, you know. And
you look pretty disabled when I saw you. You actually came down to the city council the night that Michael Tomasi held up a joint before the city council. I mean, you were getting so desperate, you were going to try to grab that joint from Tomasi. I know you.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I saw that, and I was like, man, I need to get down there and talk to that guy, see if he can help me out.
Michael Tomasi, the marijuana distributor for Santa Cruz City, thank you very much, Mayor Mike Rotkin.
Oh,
nothing against
yeah.
you, Michael, by the way, if you're listening.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, I could certainly help you out with a referral if you need a referral.
Yeah, see, I have the referral. I got the referral last September. I actually have the medical marijuana ID card. I already, you know, have the paper that says I can possess it, I can mm-hmm. smoke it, I can cultivate it. But for right now, I can't go anywhere and get anything.
Well, okay. All you need to do is, you know, hijack a car, you know, steal, you know, rob a bank, and then, you know, cash in. What's the problem?
Yeah, you know, I was sitting here listening to your show, and I'm thinking, yep,
Tim's
you know, I
go.
Am going to have to get out
Andrea,
there with my walker.
Andrea, let me
and I need to make a big sign that says, you know, disabled
that
medical marijuana patient needs donations and desperately needs to get stoned.
Right. Actually, yeah, I got to say goodbye to Tim, so I'm going to say goodbye to Tim here. And also, I want to thank you for calling in, Andrea.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for your sentiments, Andrea.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. God bless your heart for all the good work that you're doing and really reaching out to help the disabled. That's really good to hear.
We're all connected.
Kind of made my night, you know?
Thanks,
Andrea. We're all connected. Thank you.
All right.
Hey, thanks, Tim.
I'm out of here, but I'll be back.
Ah, yes. I expect you will. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I'm kind of clipping through the calls, Andrea. Sorry, but I was a little rapid on that, but I need to leave open the lines for the next 100 callers who are going to be calling in the next 3 minutes before the show ends. Actually, we have about 10 minutes, but it's not much time left. I'll be coming back on Sunday, as I usually do. It'll be at 9:30, and I'll be playing some longer interviews, and hopefully we'll have some more folks in the studio. Toronto has just, unfortunately, passed another sleeping ban. In spite of strong opposition from a lot of organizations up there. I've been kind of, I just got wind of it a couple of days ago, and I brought it up to the Huff meeting because I wanted to, and we actually got an endorsement saying that it's a bad idea to have a sleeping ban in Toronto. And what was interesting was there was so much opposition to it that it took a strong campaign by the Toronto Sun to pass. Here's the little story from the Toronto Sun, which I don't think gives us much of the real dope. But what happened was, here's how they describe it. Toronto councillors have approved a controversial $18.4 million homelessness plan that bans people from sleeping in Nathan Phillips Square after they've been offered housing. In voting 28-9 last night in favor of the plan, City Council extended the sleeping ban to cover civic centers in the former municipalities that were amalgamated to create a megacity in 1998. I see this as a victory for the people on the street. It gives them a real chance, and that's what Torontans want. Mayor David Miller said, of course, it's not what the people on the streets say, but that's another story. Poverty activists vehemently opposed the bylaw that banned sleeping in Nathan Phillips Square. Protesters forced city councillors to temporarily halt their meeting Tuesday when they burst into the City Hall Council chamber. Some city councillors also objected to the plan, saying it's not tough enough in forcing people indoors. It really does nothing to say to people, don't sleep here, you can't sleep here, Councillor Doug Holyday said. The plan includes spending $11.2 million to build affordable housing, $1.5 million to hire social workers and fund outreach initiatives, and $3 million for transitional housing designed to help people move from shelters to permanent dwellings. Outreach workers will encourage those who bunk down in Nathan Phillips Square to seek shelter. Security guards will only force people to leave the square if they refuse housing opportunities. People living on the street in a city with as much wealth as Toronto is not acceptable, Miller said. Sounds exactly what the city council was saying in 1988 here in Santa Cruz. This plan is based on the notion that is sometimes forgotten that every homeless person is first of all a person, he added. The plan's based on the knowledge it really isn't good enough to look away. It's time to help people move off the streets into homes. Kathy Crow of the Toronto Disaster Relief Committee said there was a lot of crappy stuff in the plan, adding it doesn't provide a blueprint to end homelessness. I think this is a city council that thinks they've done a really great thing to respond to homelessness. She said many, many, many others are convinced it's not going to make a change. And it's actually, I've got a whole ream of articles here around Toronto, and I'll be hopefully going into that at greater length on Sunday, particularly if I can get a speaker from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, which is a group that's outspoken and apparently willing to actually disrupt council meetings, things I've been accused of doing but haven't done. They do, and they do it quite openly. There's a really interesting article called A Legal Narrative of the Torture Memos by Joshua L. Drattle on the Counterpunch website, which I'd like to read. I don't really have time to read it, so I'm going to kind of let it go. I think what I'm going to do is end the show by playing about 3 or 4 minutes from Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, which I recorded earlier today. Find that right tape, that is. I think this is it here. It's not terribly new or unusual, but to me it's just an example of what's the kind of mounting horror that's happening in Iraq. I'm going to play that right now. And I'm going to remind you, this is simply, some of you probably heard it already, a recitation of yesterday in Iraq, as well as some responses in the United States and related activities around the murderous Iraqi war and occupation.
Thank you, because I think it was a good point.
That looks like I've got the wrong tape. Sorry about that, folks. Let's have a little music. Maybe I can find it before the end of the hour. If not, I'll try to bring back something equivalent or perhaps updated because it's going to be 3 days later when I come back on Sunday. And we'll take it up there. Hang tough. Here's a little something from David Winters.
Shady lane, you know I'm working all the time. I leave one job and I head for another. That's not a very good sign. I get no vacation in the good old summertime.
What's the story with this new jazz session that's happening at the Attic Club?
It's a jam session, 4 to 6 Fridays after work. Come on over with a tambourine, bongos, maracas, claves, whatever you got, or it'll be piano and a few things there. Stop by. It's free tea the first time, upstairs at the Attic, right next to the Metro, 4 to 6 Fridays.
Wow, and that's the new club that's right above the Blue Lagoon? Thanks. Appreciate that.
Roses Club.
There you have it. Okay, it's about, 1:10, and we're talking with
Mario.
And you have your help appreciated, even just a smile, and you have your cap in hand. Doesn't look like any dollar bills in there. How's Pickens?
It's slow, but, you know, a lot of people smiling and being friendly, so it's worth it all.
No hassles from gendarmes?
No. The cops don't bother. We don't do anything wrong, they don't bother us. They never have. So they go by and say hi, smile, say hi. No, we're not doing anything wrong. Because me and another guy over there, I know. I want to talk to him, too.
Mike. Across the street near the Rittenhouse Hole.
He works when he can, too. You know, we only do this when we have to.
What kind of work do you do?
A little plumbing, painting, a little bit of everything. I blew a disc out of my back, so I just kind of going through the bureaucracy trying to get Medi-Cal right now. See what's wrong. My legs are all shot, so...
Are you indoors or outdoors?
Oh, I'm outdoors.
And how does that impact you? Do police ever give you tickets for camping or sleeping?
No, because they never find where I'm at.
How long have you been outdoors?
A couple of years now. Oh. A couple of years.
And how long have you been panhandling for support?
Just probably maybe off and on for a year.
And is it getting better, worse, staying the same?
It just depends. It goes in sprees with it. You know, like I said, I don't do it all the time, but you know, sometimes people got it, sometimes they don't. You know, a lot of people really care and really concerned, but they just don't have it. They're scared. They don't know where their money's coming from tomorrow, you know. A lot of these people are worried about their jobs and, you know, their own security and stuff. Like I said, a lot of people out here are real friendly, smile, say hi, wish you luck. You know, it makes for a good day, you know, keeps you happy, gets you through the day all right.
And we've been talking to
Mario.
In news from Iraq, at least 20 people have died in the most violent day since Sunday's election. The deadliest incident occurred in the northern city of Kirkuk, where 12 Iraqi army recruits were killed following an ambush by Iraqi militants. In Bakuba, gunmen shot and killed two people driving in a vehicle that carried Iraqi contractors. In Mosul, a mortar attack on a U.S. base killed two civilians and injured six. In the town of Haim near the Syrian border, a car bomb exploded a house used by U.S. military snipers. In the city of Samawa, gunmen overran a police station and killed one police officer. Near Ramadi, the governor of Anbar province narrowly escaped an assassination attempt. And two Marines were killed in fighting in the Anbar province, which includes the city of Fallujah. In other news from Iraq, the influential Sunni group, the Association of Muslim Scholars, has officially called Sunday's vote illegitimate. A spokesperson said, quote, "We cannot participate in the drafting of a constitution written under military occupation." In military news, the Marine Corps missed their monthly recruiting goal in January, marking the first time this has happened in nearly a decade. The Marines have suffered 31% of the military deaths in Iraq. Meanwhile, the Marines are also making headlines in San Diego after a high-ranking Marine general admitted at a public discussion that it is, quote, fun to shoot some people. Lieutenant General James Mattis, who fought in Iraq, went on to say, quote, "It's a lot of fun to fight. You know, it's a hell of a hoot. I like brawling." Mattis leads Camp Pendleton's 1st Marine Division in Iraq. In London, the Daily Mail is reporting the British military plans to charge 7 of its own soldiers with murder for killing an Iraqi civilian 2 years ago. President Bush has promoted Elliot Abrams to be his deputy national security advisor. He'll be responsible for pushing Bush's strategy for advancing democracy abroad. Abrams played a key role in the Iran-Contra scandal and pled guilty in 1991 to withholding information from Congress. On October 10, 1986, Abrams, then a State Department employee, testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that he did not know that Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was directing illegal arms sales to Iran and diverting the proceeds to assist the Nicaraguan Contras. Republican Congress member Jewel Heffley, who had admonished House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, has been replaced as chair of the House.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Come back again on Sunday, and you can hear more. Thanks for being with me.
Shady lane, you know I'm working all the time. I leave one job and I head for another. That's not a very good sign. I get no vacation in the good old summertime. I
been strolling down a shady lane, because you know that I've been working, working all the time. I leave one job and I hit for a
of sight to rest my eyes in shades of green, under dreaming spires to Ichiku Park, that's where I've been.
What did you do there?
I got high.
What did you feel there?
Well, I cried.
Why the tears there?
Tell you why. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful.
I feel inclined to blow my mind. Get on up, meet the ducks with a bun. They all come out to groove about, relax and have fun and listen.
Tell you what I'll do.
What will you
do? I'd like to go there now with you. You can miss out school.
What that be?
Why go to learn the words of fools?
What will we do there?
We'll get high.
What will we touch there?
We'll touch the sky.
That's why the tea is there.
I tell you why.
It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful.
I feel inclined to blow my mind. Get hung up, beat the ducks with a bun. They all come out to groove her boat and my Santa Fargo the sun.
It's all too beautiful. 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 It's all too beautiful.
Love that you saw.